You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Photography Enthusiast. I am your host, Daniel Lee, or Photos by D-O-E-E. I noticed last week I forgot to put photography in there. I think I was just The Enthusiast or The Photography. So luckily I remembered to not make that mistake again this week. Now this week we have, or this fortnight, we have a special episode because it is my Fujifilm XS10 review. So you know what that means. Usually with my reviews, I dedicate it just to that. So there will be no personal updates, no news, just straight into the main topic. Now, even if you don't shoot Fujifilm, I feel like this could still be of interest to you. Who knows, maybe one day you want another body or you want a second body or something and you don't know much about Fujifilm. You know, I feel like they have a certain perception, so this could be very different. And this review, it's not so much like a very technical thing where I just go over specs. Don't even mention the specs, really. You know, I don't go over what, you know, how many FPS you can get, that kind of stuff. It's really a very casual, very user-based review and all about real-world usage, that kind of stuff, how this body works and how it doesn't work. There is a written post that accompanies this review. That's where all the images are, because you know, what good is a review if I don't have any images to back up whether I like it or not? That will be in the show notes, so make sure to check that out. If for some reason the show notes weren't working or the link doesn't work, you can find it at thephotographyenthusiast.com. Now, let's get into the review. So when it comes to APS-C cameras, I've owned quite a few. Like everyone, I started out with an APS-C camera, but most recently I was using the Canon EFM system, which is a great system, very highly underrated, underappreciated, had like a cult following as well. But the main issue is it's kind of a dead mount. In reality, you know, even EF is a dead mount because RF is here now. RF is the present and the future. There won't be any more RF or EF bodies. So in that regard, EF is kind of more dead than EFM because apparently EFM make up 30% of Canon's yearly gross income or whatever. So, you know, that has a bit more of a future. But in saying that, as you would know if you're a regular listener, I like to make the most of my resale value. So with EFM sort of winding down, I wanted to make sure that I didn't lose money and I decided to sell all my EFM gear. Originally, I did want to go for a different brand to what I was shooting, which was Canon at the time of buying this. I did find though that I couldn't really find something that I really liked. So originally I thought I would just be done with APS-C and I would focus more purely on full frame, because you know, full frame has always been my favorite. But when I looked at the more entry level cheaper bodies from competition that I wanted, so for example, the Nikon Z5 itself. So that one, price wise, it's a bit higher, say like 1800. I think it's around there, has IBIS, but there's no fully articulating screen. So that was a deal breaker for me. Then next up, we had the Insony Camp. I didn't want to go for an older body, like an A sort of 7.3, an A7.2, that kind of stuff, because they didn't have fully articulating screens. The main option for me at that point, the cheapest main option, would have been the A7C, because that's the only one with a fully articulating screen. But that one was like $2,500, so didn't really fit in what I wanted to spend. I believe this was just before, it's just around the same time the R7 had been announced and the R10 had been announced. But the problem with those was I don't really want to use full frame lenses on it. If you're someone that shoots wildlife, then maybe the idea of using full frame glass on an APS-C camera seems better for you, because you know, you get that extra reach. But otherwise, it wasn't really feasible in what my use cases are. Not to mention the Canon R7 was around $2,200 or something, and I think the R10 was around $1,200 to $1,500, which they're both good cameras. I know in autofocus they're great, but you know, it wasn't what I was looking for, and I'd always wanted to try Fuji, which led me to the Fujifilm XS10. So if you're not familiar with Fuji's lineup, which I'm still not, to be honest, that familiar with it, because it has so many different classes of bodies. I have a body called the XS10. So the XS10 is pretty much just like a XT4, which I don't even know how you would range that. I consider it to be one of their more higher end bodies, but I don't know if actual Fuji users would. But pretty much the XS10 dual card slots, weather sealing, it's got all pretty much everything. The XS10 has the same sensor, pretty much same processor, same everything except for the weather sealing, the dual card slots. It even has IBIS. So, and that body goes for around I'm not sure how much US, I think around 800 US, but 1200 or so, you can get sometimes 1100 on sale. So for what it offers, it is very, very good. You know, that 26 megapixel backside illuminated sensor. And if you don't know the difference, backside illuminated sensor does help with dynamic range in that. As I mentioned, it does have that same features as the XT4. So you're already getting good there. The IBIS, fully articulating screen, it had everything I wanted. So because of that, I decided that was the best camera for the price. You know, like if you look at an M6II, that's around 12 to 1300 or more. And that doesn't even have IBIS. When I was looking at also the Sony lineup of APS-C cameras, the only camera with IBIS but is about 1800, which is the A6600, but that one doesn't have a fully articulating screen. So another deal breaker for me. Pretty much no matter which camera I picked, there was something that was like a deal breaker aside from the Fuji. So I decided just, you know, get that. I got the XS10. I got the XF 23mm f1.4 RWR-LM lens. I apologize if I sort of mix up my topic or go in and out a bit. It sounds a bit weird. My asthma is very bad, but you know, so I have to keep coughing and I'm going to have to remove that from the recording. So that if it seems a bit weird, incoherent, that's probably why. But otherwise I had that XS10 plus the 23mm. I did get the 56mm f1.4 from Sigma as well, because that lens was much better pricing compared to the Fuji one, newer, sharper, that kind of stuff. So those is the kit that I used for the majority of this review. I did have the XF 27mm f2.0 WR pancake lens, but that one only had for like a weekend and I sold it because I did not like it. We'll go into that a little bit more later on because it's relevant to a certain section, but yeah, that's that. Now the main title of this article is pretty much, or that, you know, the title of the review would be why Fujifilm is more than just dials. So before shooting Fujifilm, all I ever hear about is like, they're like film cameras. You know, everything's manual. You got, you know, rather than control everything in the camera or auto, that kind of stuff, it's all done through dials on the camera, you know, ISO dial, aperture dial, you know, that kind of stuff. Which if you know me, I'm not into that kind of stuff. I hate aperture rings, hate all that stuff. So a traditional body that does that, like your XT4, for example, would not be for me. No matter what, I would not buy it. The only reason this XS10 works well is because it is a, what you call a PASM camera. That's got the actual mode dial, you know, program. I think it is auto, shutter, and manual kind of thing. Now, a lot of people will sort of, I know previously it deterred me from using Fujifilm because it was only manual stuff, which I didn't want to deal with. And I know a lot of Fuji users want Fujifilm cameras to only be manual, but I disagree with that. You know, they have a lot more to offer. So if I tell someone that I'm shooting Fuji, but I hate manual stuff, they may ask why I chose Fujifilm if I'm not into that. Well, to me, these three sort of reasons are why Fujifilm is more than just dials and more than just about manual controls and manual everything. Now, the first one of those reasons is the film presets and why they matter. Now, you may hear that film presets and think, I don't care about film. You know, I'm not one of those people that's into that. Why do I need to care about these film presets? Now, when it comes to film presets, you know, it won't just affect JPEGs, but it can actually affect the RAWs as well. So it saves so much time editing. So in the camera, you have your film simulations, which, you know, you have your Velvia, whatever the ones, Provia. As you can tell, I don't really use a whole bunch of them. I pretty much just shoot in Velvia the whole time because I just love it for almost everything. But pretty much you have these and you can adjust several little features like the dynamic range of them. You can adjust the tones and curves. You can adjust the saturation if there's the color balance of whether it leans more towards greens or reds or blues, that kind of stuff. So when you use all these settings in the camera, what it does is obviously when you take the image, you know, say you're shooting in RAW and JPEG, you will have your JPEG, which will obviously look just like that. And many Fuji users like to just use those JPEGs and don't touch it. Keep it as pure as possible kind of thing in their opinion. Otherwise, you have two options with the RAW file. So if you're using something like Lightroom, I'm not sure, I assume Capture One would do it as well, but I don't know because I've never used it. Lightroom and Adobe Camera Raw, you have camera profiles. So if you notice, when you load a RAW file in Adobe, just above the basics panel, it'll have that camera profile. So if you're using like Canon, Sony, Nikon, it'll probably be like camera standard or that kind of stuff. I know there's some people who sell camera profiles for, say, Canon cameras that make it look more like the JPEGs. If you're shooting in, say, Velvia, for example, when you load it into Lightroom, you'll see in that camera profile, it'll literally say Velvia. So that image will generally look exactly like the JPEG, even though it's a RAW file, because it's loading all those settings. So from there, if you want to make some minor adjustments, you can do that. If, for example, you like shooting in these film profiles, say Velvia for the JPEG, but you don't want it to affect your RAW, you could simply just change it to camera default or camera standard, and it'll show you that flat RAW file, and you could do everything you like if you, for example, prefer to have your RAWs one way and your JPEGs another. So it has a lot of options and honestly saves so much time. People go on that Sony colors are bad, Canon colors are the best, but I can tell you, even if you like Canon colors, I much prefer Fuji colors over that, especially with these film presets. You have so much control on the custom modes on the cameras. You can assign it to different ones. So for example, my number one was Kodachrome or something. Number two was Velvia. Number three is something else, some Provia one I made. You can really customize it. So you find a scene that would suit, you know, Kodachrome better, you can swap to custom mode one. This scene, a lot of colors, you want Velvia, swap to Velvia, custom mode two. Simple as that. It saves you so much time with editing. Rather than, you know, say a Canon file or Sony file, me editing everything from scratch, when I edit a lot of Fuji files, as long as I get it very close in camera, then it will just be, you know, boost the contrast a bit more, maybe adjust highlights, whites a bit, slightly adjust the colors if I feel like there's a little tint I don't like, and that's it. High pass filter, sharpen, done. Simple as that. You'll find, you know, if you look online, a lot of Fuji users prefer to shoot JPEG only, as I mentioned before. If you, for example, like to go out, you want to post food photos on your Instagram story, that kind of stuff, and you don't want to have to worry about editing, this camera would be perfect. So you could just literally take all your food photos, save that JPEG to your phone, crop it if you have to, and post it. Simple as that. It's really like a great replacement for your smartphone. You can get certain lenses that are tiny, but most of the Fuji stuff is very light as well, like the XS10. So those film presets save you so much time, and they will honestly be the nicest JPEGs you will get from any camera. Well, out of all the ones I've shot anyway, which is Canon, Fuji, and Sony. Now, the next area why I'd say they're more than just dials and why they deserve attention is because the lens range is massive. Now, Fuji has been doing their X-mount, I think since it was like 2010 or 2012, somewhere around there. So they have a large lens library. When it comes to first-party options, you've got so many different options. All in Fuji, you have F2 options, F1.4, even some F1 or F1.2 options as well, depending on the focal length. So no matter what, you have so many options. You know, you'll find with a lot of manufacturers like, say, Canon, Sony, Nikon, they are a lot more focused on full frame. Every Sony event I'd been to, they mentioned that full frame is the best, you know, bigger sensor equals better images, better low light performance, la la la. Whereas up until a period before they started medium format, Fuji's sole focus was APS-C, and because of that, they have the lens library to match. They have a lot older, smaller, tiny lenses. So for example, 35mm, you have the 35mm f1.4, the old lens, which is a very small, old one. A lot of people say that's their favorite lens for the character and all that. But then you also have a newer lens, which is slightly bigger, which is the 33mm f1.4R LMWR. And fun fact, at the time of recording, I still don't quite know what the R in the lens stands for. I know the LM is linear motor and the WR is weather reduction. I assume the R has something to do with more like their L lens equivalent or something. But Fuji has been going around updating a lot of their lenses because, if you don't know, they did release a Fujifilm X-H2 and X-H2S, which have 40 megapixel sensors. So apparently these lenses that have been updated in recent times, I think it's like the 18 f1.4, 23 1.4, 33 1.4, and now the 56 1.2, they're all designed with that large high resolution sensor, not so much large sensor, but the high resolution sensor in mind. You also now have, you know, LM motors in them, like linear motors. So the 18, 23, and 33, the motor is silent, very fast. I really like it. So when it comes to third parties, I believe you previously had a lot of third-party manual focus lenses, but now Tamron and Sigma are starting to release their lenses. So currently, I believe the Tamron 17-70 APS-C lens, that's a 2.8, is available on Fuji, which offers a really huge range. And if you don't know, Fuji has a 1.5 crop factor, not 1.6 like Canon. So if you're getting a lens like that, I think it's something like, you know, 25 to 27, something like that, to 100 and 10 or 105 millimeters. So covers a lot of range, especially for a 2.8 lens. I assume they'll probably release some of their other APS-C lenses like the 11 to 20. Once that one comes out, that will be really good. Otherwise, Sigma released their Trinity, their 30 millimeter F1.4, 16 F1.4 and 56 millimeter F1.4 on Fuji already. I obviously own the 56 millimeter. Those are all really great affordable options. The Sigma 56, for example, is much cheaper than the Fuji 56 F1.2, probably like half the price or something. I know AED, it's around half the price. I don't know about all currencies though. You also have the Sigma 18 to 50 millimeter F2.8 zoom coming out later in the year. If you want just a lens for travel, that lens I assume would be amazing. Something I may invest in the future. I haven't decided yet, but originally I was, but I had some gear changes with Fuji, so that's up in the air now. And yeah, if you like different lens designs, if you prefer manual lenses, Fuji has them for you. If you prefer clean lenses, you know, like Sigma ones that have no controls on them, maybe just an AF on, AF off switch, similar with Tamron, you have those. If you like aperture rings, you know, you have the older Fuji lenses that have heaps of different dials and L on them. Otherwise, the newer, more sleek design ones like the 23, 33, 18 or whatever it was, 16, 18, one of those. Those ones, they have pretty much no, they just have the aperture dial and I think has a autofocus, manual focus switch. I can't even remember now. Own the lens for that many months, but I didn't even take notice of that because I never use it. But either way, main fact is they have lots of options for you. They even have a lock for the aperture button, which makes it a lot easier as well. So if you want to lock it to auto, like pretty much what I do, and don't worry about all that kind of stuff, very, very easy for you. So, you know, like I mentioned before, if you don't like vintage stuff, not into that kind of vintage lens look sort of thing, which I'm not, there are definitely nice looking lenses. So if you like Sony's GM lenses, how they have the aperture ring, the Fuji, new Fuji lens designs, somewhat similar, different like lens coatings, different that kind of stuff. So they do have a different look, but they're similar in the regard. They just got a nice clean look with the aperture ring and that's it. Now, the next one up is like they're keeping up with the competition. Now, with the reputation of being more film vintage looking cameras, there may be the belief that Fuji cameras don't exactly keep up with competition in terms of other features besides for lens, you know, film presets, but that's not true. So obviously that film preset, you know, that kind of stuff affecting the RAW as a camera profile, that's something that other competition doesn't do yet. I do feel Sony is sort of working towards that because I noticed on my A7 IV, they have that option of customizing their JPEGs in detail, like what you can do on Fuji. But at the same time, I don't believe it comes across as a camera profile, so it's not quite there yet. But Fuji has some great features that I was really happy to see that made the transition over much easier. So first off, the zebra highlight warnings. I do mention these quite often, but you know, because it's a review, who knows, maybe a new listener that doesn't know what it is, so I'll go over them. If you don't know what zebra highlight warnings are, pretty much they're also known as blinkies sometimes. So if you're taking a photo of, say, a sunset, and then part of your image is overexposed, you'll get, you know, blinking black and white lines over that area that's overexposed. Now, some people may hear this and think, oh, but my Canon or Nikon camera does that too. What it does is, you know, when I go into playback and review the image, it'll show me that. Whereas with this zebra highlight warnings, which Sony do as well, I'm not sure about other brands. I know Canon and Nikon don't, but it'll actually do it in live view. So while you're actually taking a photo, you can see what's overexposed. This is, in my opinion, better than a histogram, better than anything. Because number one, with a mirrorless camera, you know, what you see is what you get. You can actually see your exposure. And say you did need to expose for the highlights or the shadows. Say that sunset landscape photo you're taking has really bright sky but really dark foreground. You don't want to underexpose it too much because then your shadows may get noise, but at the same time, you don't want to blow your highlights. What you could do is you could keep increasing your exposure, whether that's through shutter speed or aperture or whatever. Keep increasing it, and then when you get to the point where the highlights are blown, you will see all of a sudden that these blinkies show up. Once those blinkies show up, all you need to do is dial it down by, say, 1/3 of a stop, and that's it. You know that those highlights will not be blown because the camera has told you, so you get the best possible exposure without having to expose it properly in tough scenarios like that. Because when you go in the post, you can easily pull up the shadows and reduce the highlights and balance out the exposure without having to worry about those highlights being blown. And that is why they're much more effective than checking in playback or checking a histogram, because you actually know exactly how much leeway you kind of have. Histogram could work, but it's a lot easier than rather than having that take up part of your screen, seeing that, just seeing those blinkies on the actual image. Now, although they don't have a bulb timer like Canon, Fuji does have a exposure over 30 seconds for if you're doing long exposures, which is important for me. So on some brands, Sony, once you go into bulb mode, you either go 30 seconds or bulb mode and that's it, and you need a remote trigger to start and stop the camera. Whereas with Canon, you have a bulb timer where when you put into bulb, you can set the exact exposure, say 1 minute, 1 second, and it will automatically stop after that. So all you need to do is 2 second self timer, start the exposure, it automatically stops for you, no remote is needed. Fuji is sort of in the middle there. They don't have a bulb timer, but you can do exposures up to, I think it was like 9 minutes or something, and I think it goes every one third stop. So you'll be 30 seconds maximum, and then I think 45, 60 or whatever, a minute and a half, 90 seconds, sorry, 2 minutes, that kind of stuff. So you can go over, not to the same degree that you can with Canon, but you can still sort of go over and don't need a remote in that sense if you can balance the exposure. This is good. You know, obviously it's a feature that I wish Sony had, so they are ahead in that regard. If they could refine it later on and add an actual bulb timer, I would be very, very happy with that. I believe it's Olympus or someone even have a live exposure preview. So when you do a long exposure, you can actually see the exposure show up on the rear screen so you know exactly what it's going to look like and when to stop it. That would obviously be the most amazing if someone could include that, but still waiting on that outside of Olympus, I believe. The actual Fuji app has pretty decent functionality, I would say. I do notice it connects to my phone a lot easier compared to other brands. I know with Sony, Canon, that kind of stuff, it could always be a hassle connecting over. But in terms of copying photos over, it's pretty easy. Same as just connecting, looking at it. Decent functionality. It's not like far behind or anything. Their IBIS does seem to work really well. And you know, just their general BSI sensor design is great. I actually felt the dynamic range at times was even better than what it was on my R6. Obviously the R6 had much better ISO performance being a full frame sensor, but in general, the IBIS, I never felt like I struggled to hand hold with any of my lenses, the 56, the 23, because neither of those had IBIS, I mean in lens IS, but I could just sort of reduce my shutter speed and have no issues. Obviously depending on how good you are at hand holding, you probably get even better results. For Canon, their IBIS was really good, mainly because of the fact that they designed their lens IS to work in conjunction with the IBIS, so that way you're getting a really effective one, whereas I think a lot of other companies, Sony, Fuji, their IBIS wasn't designed that way, so it doesn't work like that. I can't say for certain for Fuji though, because I have never used an IS lens and I haven't been shooting that long to know all about the history and their designs and all that. Otherwise, like anything, there are some downsides that I do need to discuss. So the first one is no Bluetooth remote support. I know a lot of people like wired remotes, that kind of stuff, or to just use the app. But for me, using, especially for like a long exposure, the app is not a feasible option. I will often either use my phone as the timer to see how long the exposure is, or I will simply browse on my phone while I do that 2 minute exposure, which is a lot harder when you're connected to the phone. Not to mention it would drain the battery of both my phone and the camera, whereas I would rather it only drain the camera battery. Clearly they do have Bluetooth support. The fact that you can use your phone, connect to your camera through Bluetooth shows they have that functionality there. So having a Bluetooth remote would be excellent. You know, we actually have a local Fuji store. Maybe I'll go in there and suggest and ask why they haven't created one and if they plan to create one. But ever since I first got a Bluetooth remote, because this camera doesn't have an IR infrared sensor, so those cheap like $10, $20 remotes you can get off Amazon or eBay won't work. But otherwise, if they had that, it would make it much easier. With the Bluetooth sensors, they're so good, you don't need line of sight. You can use them from a much further distance. Much better than using the app. We really need that. The other downside slightly is the AF. Now, let me be clear here. The AF is not bad. I would still prefer this AF over a DSLR, but it's just not as good as the competition. I find that even my Canon EOS M50 Mark II had better AF. Now, what do I mean by better? So just to preface this, it is very lens dependent. So the autofocus on lenses like the Sigma 56 or the 23mm I mentioned, don't really have issues with them. There was shots I feel like the camera should have hit that did miss with both those lenses, but it wasn't too much. It wasn't, say, like 8 out of 10 photos, maybe 2 out of 10, 3 out of 10, not too bad. Whereas with lenses like that XF 27mm f2.8 Pancake, that one absolutely struggled to autofocus. So Just basic stuff like, say, focusing on my chair. All my other lens will be able to focus on any chair in my house, even if the contrast isn't that great. Whereas that lens, absolutely struggled. Taking photos of buildings, anything, that kind of stuff, it would always hunt back and forth. It would never be able to focus properly. I was using AFC, so I don't know if that has to do with anything, but you know, I always use AFC. I've said in previous episodes, I do believe AFC is the best AF mode to use if you're hand-holding. Doesn't matter what your subject is, if you're hand-holding, you should be using AFC. Unless your camera is static on a tripod and the subject is static, then use AFS. Any other time, AFC only. IAF as well does have its issues. It sometimes diverts to back to face mode. Not to mention, you'll find it often finds eyes anywhere. I remember seeing that as a funny thing when I looked at reviews and wondered how frequently it would show up, but it literally does. A chair, it can find the face, your food, even if you like you pointed it at the sky with nothing there, it'll somehow find an eye sometimes. So I don't quite know how that works, but it would be great if Fuji could sort of refine that in a firmware update. I know from what I've seen a lot of reviews, Fuji users don't seem to care about IAF and that kind of stuff and think it's weak to use it. But for me, you know, if the technology is there and I can focus more on the creativity, my composition, my exposure, I would much rather be focusing on that than if I got my shot in focus or not. The last sort of downside I really have is just the aperture rings. This one is really nitpicking for me. I don't really care because you can lock them in place, so they don't really affect me that much. Whereas if they had something like a control ring, I still think Canon's control rings, even though I'm not happy with Canon now because of third-party stuff, I left Canon for Sony because of that, not because of lens selection, lens pricing. They do have very innovative stuff. The control rings, I love. The fact that, you know, if you want to change that control ring to exposure compensation or ISO or anything you want, you can do that. Whereas on cameras like Sony and Fuji, those aperture rings are purely that, aperture only. And, you know, at the end of the day, they're not actual aperture rings. Really, they're just electronic controls that let you adjust the aperture. They're not that. So technically, I believe the program, right, you could be able to change them. It's more just they don't do that. So because of that, that's my main sort of downsides for this camera. Otherwise, as you can tell, it's pretty positive. In review, you know, like this camera and the Fuji system offer really great things for the price, especially the XS10. If you're used to using DSLRs or any other brand and you like PASM and that kind of stuff, you want some great APS-C lenses, a camera that has excellent, honestly, excellent image quality that can get you so many amazing shots, whether you're traveling, just walking out day to day. Any of the Fuji bodies like the XS10, the X-T4, the X100V, all of them, you'll be very happy on with them, for, I'm sure. As I mentioned before, a lot of Fuji users were very unhappy with Fuji making so many PASM cameras, you know, and think it's like a betrayal of their heritage and what they stand for. But if you want Fuji to succeed, they need to appeal to more users. If all bodies were just manual controls, people like me who don't like that stuff would never consider buying a Fuji body. If the XS10 didn't exist and I had my only option was something like a X-T4 that has all manual dials for ISO, shutter speed, everything, I would not be buying Fuji. Even these new lens designs, which they don't like, you know, like your 23 and 33 millimeter, I love these lens designs. I think them, the 56 millimeter, these are perfect. I know Fuji users consider them to be too large as well, but I don't think they're large. I personally think they're a great, reasonable size. Sure, I'm used to using other brands and, you know, full frame cameras. And not all their lens designs are the best, that is for sure. For example, you know, the Canon EFM 22 millimeter, that's an F2 APS-C lens. That one is much better than the Fuji 27 millimeter. The 27, that one is insanely sharp. I would say it is much sharper than the 22, but the 22 is a stop faster. It's lighter and the AF is much better. So it's sort of like a back and forth, you know? No matter what brand you go for, there will always be ups and downs of that system. Whether you can accept those ups and downs is really up to you. And that sort of will be the deciding factor. Otherwise, you know, hopefully Fuji continue to making these PASM cameras like the XS10. I don't see myself getting rid of Fuji for a long time to come. Anytime I need to travel and a short trip, you know, like I live in Sydney, so if I go, say, Melbourne for the weekend or something, or New Zealand, that kind of stuff, I could see myself easily bringing this. So as I mentioned, that's the other thing I was going to mention. Earlier in the review, I mentioned I own the 23 and the 56, and I own the 27 for a short while and sold it. Since using Fuji, I actually sold the 23mm as well. I actually just sold it 2 days ago at the time of recording. The lens itself is amazing, but I sold it purely because it's a 35mm equivalent. I now have the Sony a7 IV and the 35GM. I spent a lot of money on that kit and that lens, so if I'm going to be using 35, it's going to be using that you know, combination. In saying that, when I used to use the M50, my most used lens was the EFM 32mm f1.4, which is, you know, sort of like your 50mm equivalent lens. Now, because I don't know, honestly don't know why I didn't buy that lens before. I think because I thought it was too narrow just for a general purpose lens. I doubled up on everything, 35-85 on full frame, 35-85 on APS-C. Which didn't make sense. I need the APS-C to more complement the full frame or vice versa. So because of that, I actually purchased a 33mm f1.4 RWR lens for Fuji. So that way I have 50 on APS-C and 35 and 85 on full frame. So when I travel, this Fuji is going to be coming everywhere with me. More than likely, I like to shoot wide when I travel. I don't, you know, care too much about certain things. So my a7 IV will have the 16 to 35 f4, which is a tiny combination. And then I'll also be carrying the XS10 with the 33mm with me everywhere. So if I want to have some nice bokeh, then I can use that combo. Whereas if I want to capture something wide or, you know, something else, that's where the Sony comes in. So I have a lot of options. And I also have the 56. So if I want an 85 field of view, I can even bring that along. And that's a really tiny light travel kit. So this Fuji will stay with me for a long time, but my lens lineup will more than likely stay as the 33mm and the 56. I'm tempted to add a macro in there as well rather than get it on full frame, but we'll see how we go. I haven't quite decided on that yet. Still, you know, just after this, PC is the next thing that needs upgrading. No more. But otherwise, this concludes my Fujifilm XS10 review and why Fujifilm is more than just dials. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please make sure to subscribe. Leave a comment on the article as well, which you can find in the show notes. Leave us a rating. Really, I would appreciate that. Otherwise, if you want to listen to more, make sure to subscribe. You can find them at thephotographyenthusiast.com, all of our previous podcasts. Otherwise, if you want to see my photography work, I'm at photosbydoe.com. Most active on there, my Flickr, which a link will be on that website, as well as my Twitter, which is at photosbydoe.com. Thank you again very much for listening. Take care and stay safe. See ya.